About Audre Lorde.
Audre Lorde.
Yes, okay. She was born Audrey Geraldine Lorde on February 18th, 1934, and lived until November 17th, 1992. Wow. She was an American writer, feminist, womanist, librarian, and civil rights activist. She described herself as a black lesbian mother, warrior, and poet, who dedicated her life to confronting and addressing injustices of racism, sexism, classism, and homophobia. And,
Fight the good fight. Audrey.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And I looked up what exactly womanism or being a womanist is, because I didn't know specifically what that was. So, womanism emerged as a social theory aiming to address the particular experiences of black women and women of other marginalized or oppressed minority groups. Audre herself didn't use the word to describe herself, though much of her work grew out of, and I don't know that it was necessarily, like, categorized by that word at the time.
Sure.
Much of her work and many other black women's works, though much of her work grew out of her and many other black women's observations that feminism struggles with inclusivity, particularly related to race, class, and sexuality.
Gotcha.
Is the sentence I was trying to say. Yes. So that's what womanism is.
Yes.
She was born in New York City to Caribbean immigrant parents, Frederick Byron Lorde and Linda Gertrude Belmar Lorde. They settled in Harlem. Her mother was of mixed ancestry, but could, quote-unquote, pass as Spanish, which was a source of pride for her family. And her father was darker than the Belmar family, which was her mother's family. He was darker than they liked, and they only allowed the couple to marry because of Byron Lorde's charm, ambition, and persistence.
Wow. Yeah, that was a thing.
It is a thing.
It still is.
Yeah.
Wow.
Audre was nearsighted to the point of being legally blind and was the youngest of three girls. She grew up listening to her mother's stories about the West Indies, and at the age of four, she learned... I thought it was interesting that it was the Wikipedia bio on her that specifically said this, but as I thought about it, I guess it made more sense, but they specifically said that at the age of four, she learned to talk while she learned to read, and her mother taught her to write around the same time. And I was like, is that not normal to learn all at the same time? But then I was like, well, I guess it's more normal to learn how to talk first.
Right.
And then you learn how to read and write sort of around the same time, rather than learning how to read, write, and talk all at once.
Yeah, I mean, there are, I mean, I babysit for kids that are four or five, and they can talk up a storm, but they, and they know how to form sentences, but they can't read them yet.
Right, yeah. Which is so interesting.
It's amazing.
She chose to drop the Y, because she was born Audrey, but she chose to drop the Y in her name while she was still a child, and she later explained that she was more interested in the artistic symmetry of the E endings in the two side-by-side names, Audre Lorde, because Lorde has an E at the end of it in her last name. She was more interested in that rather than spelling her name the way her parents had intended. So that's why she changed her name to Audre Lorde.
Cool.
She had a difficult relationship with her parents growing up, who were often busy with their real estate business in the post-Great Depression economy.
Wow.
They were often cold and distant, especially her mother, who was deeply suspicious of people with darker skin than hers, which Audre was, and the outside world in general. Which, isn't that so...
But it's your own daughter. And she married a man.
Yeah.
Wow.
Her relationship with her mother appears prominently in her later poems, such as Story Books on a Kitchen Table. So just a very interesting and,
I can't imagine
that. It'd be hard to wrap your mind around as a child, having your mother be sort of like cold and distant because of the way you look, but it's like, you're the one who, like, I came from you.
Like you know me better than anybody else.
Right.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So poetry played a huge part in her childhood. She had trouble communicating and turned to the power of poetry as a form of expression. She memorized a great deal of poetry and would use it to communicate.
If asked
how she was feeling, Audre would reply by reciting a poem. She said in the book Black Women's, or it might have been a journal, Black Women Writers, she said, I used to speak in poetry. People would say, well, what do you think, Audre? What happened to you yesterday? And I would recite a poem, and somewhere in that poem would be a line or a feeling I would be sharing. In other words, I literally communicated through poetry, and when I couldn't find the poems to express the things I was feeling, that's what started me writing poetry.
Oh my God.
Isn't that so interesting and so cool.
That's incredible.
Such a young person, too, to be able to express themselves through poetry and
like completely, literature.
Yeah.
Fully mm-hmm. Express mm-hmm. themselves through poetry.
So around the age of 12 or 13, she began writing her own poetry and connecting with others at her school who were considered outcasts as she felt she was. She attended Hunter College High School, which was a secondary school for intellectually gifted students, and graduated with a BA in 1951. So I think at the time it was Hunter College High School, so I think it was sort of like a cross between high school and a college where
like,
you earn a degree.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
mm-hmm.
yeah. While she was at Hunter College, she published her first poem in Seventeen magazine. Right? I love Seventeen magazine. after her school's literary journal rejected it for being inappropriate.
Yikes.
I don't know what exactly the poem was. Also, while in high school, she participated in poetry workshops sponsored by the Harlem Writers Guild, but noted that she always felt somewhat of an outcast from the guild, saying she felt she was not accepted because she was, quote, both crazy and queer, and they thought I would grow out of it all. But they thought I would grow out of it all.
Mm.
She earned her MLS, which I think means Master's of Literary Science, from Columbia. She was a librarian in New York City public schools throughout the 60s.
Library sciences?
Maybe. Yeah, that would, yeah. Either, yeah, Master's of Library Sciences or Literary Science.
Yeah.
Probably library if she then went straight to working in, like, libraries. She had two children with her husband, Edward Rollins, a white gay man, before they divorced in 1970.
Wow.
And when they were married, she was open as a lesbian.
Oh, my God.
And, yeah, so I didn't read the full article, but there was an article that went more in-depth into that and talked a little bit more about that. But, yeah, so interesting. I don't know, yeah, and I don't know if it was just a matter of, like, sort of society saying that you had to be married, and so it was two people who were like, well, you're gay and I'm lesbian, let's get married because we can't marry the person that we want to. So they divorced in 1970. In 1972, Audra met her lifetime partner, Francis Clayton, and began teaching as a poet in residence at Tougaloo College, is I think how it's pronounced.
Tougaloo.
Her experiences in teaching and pedagogy, as well as her place as a black queer woman in white academia, went on to inform her life of work. Her contributions to feminist theory, critical race studies, and queer theory intertwine her personal experiences with broader political aims. She articulated early on the intersections of race, class, and gender in a canonical essays such as The Master's Tools Will Not Dismantle the Master's House.
Canonical?
Yeah.
I've never heard that word. I've heard conical.
This is canonical, like canon, like
something
that's in a canon, so canonical.
I've never heard that word before. That's amazing. I'm
pretty sure I copy and pasted that sentence, so
what?
It is a word.
A great word. Canonical.
So her early collections of poetry include The First Cities, published in 1968, Cables to Rage in 1970, and From a Land Where Other People Live in 1972, which was nominated for a National Book Award. Some of her later works, including New York Head Shop and Museum, 1974, which that one was markedly her most political work to date, following much of her earlier work, which was focused more on the transience of love. So that work, Cole, published in 1976, and The Black Unicorn, published in 1978, include powerful poems of protest. So some of her later works is where she got more sort of into protest and the political side of her work. Lord once said, I have a duty to speak the truth as I see it, and to share not just my triumphs, but just not just the things that felt good, but the pain, the intense, often unmitigating pain.
Mm.
She was concerned with modern society's tendency to categorize groups of people. Lord fought the marginalization of such categories as lesbian and black woman. She was central to many liberation movements and activist circles, including second wave feminism, which she was like a part of it, but she also deeply criticized it because of its leaders, which were basically mostly white upper middle class women.
I've heard of a few people who have a lot of people when I've looked up like writers and prominent mm-hmm. people of that time mm-hmm. who were like, yeah, I'm a feminist, but I really disagree with this.
Yeah, criticizing that.
You know, upper this, white, yeah, the practice yeah. of it and, like, who was in charge of it.
Yeah. And she gave a speech. She was at a conference in New York City. I can't remember what year, but she was giving, she was at a, like, a convention for second wave feminism. And she gave a speech. That's actually where she gave the speech that was called The Master's Tools Will Not Dismantle the Master's House, which was mm-hmm. An essay that was published. But so she gave that speech, and she, while during that speech, she said, so she was saying that she, like, that was the only panel at that conference where she was a black woman or a lesbian woman or that sort of thing, or a black lesbian feminist.
Right.
So just noting that the representation wasn't there at that panel for this thing that was supposed to be
for
asking for inclusion and right. whatnot. So yeah, she was active in that, as well as, other civil rights of the time and black cultural movements and struggles for the GLBQT equality, which is LGBTQ, but in a different order, which I thought was really interesting. This is from Poetry Foundation, and they specifically put
GLBTQ.
GLBTQ. So I don't know if that's what it originally was in, like, the 60s and 70s, and then it got rearranged to be LGBTQ. But it's all the same letters. It's just in a different order.
It's just LG or GL.
And TQ is also out of order.
LGBTQ.
Yeah, and this is GLBQT.
Oh.
Yeah. weird. So that's just interesting.
they were we're workshopping it. Yeah. We'll get back to you.
Her work is especially known for the power of its call for social and racial justice, as well as its dedications of queer depictions of queer experience and sexuality. She was also a noted prose writer, and her account of her struggle with breast cancer and mastectomy, called The Cancer Journals, which was published in 1980 and won the Gay Caucus Book of the Year Award in 1981, was regarded as a major work of illness narrative. In the piece, she confronts the possibility of death and addresses the silence surrounding cancer, illness, and the lived experience of women. She explained her decisions to not wear a prosthesis after undergoing a mastectomy, saying, "Prosthesis offers the empty comfort of nobody will know the difference. But it is that very difference which I wish to affirm, because I have lived it and survived it and wish to share that strength with other women."
Right.
So in her 1982 novel, Zammy, A New Spelling of My Name, which is where she explained why she changed her name when she was younger, it's in that she... that quote had come from.
Okay.
That novel was described as a biomythography, combining elements of history, biography, and myth.
Nice.
So, yeah.
We're all about that recently.
So, yeah, and it's such an interesting concept. She also had a book called Sister Outsider, Essays and Speeches, which was published in 1984, and it collected Lord's nonfiction prose and has become a canonical text in black studies, women's studies, and queer theory. And her book, A Burst of Light, in 1988, was another collection of essays which won the National Book Award. In the late 1980s, she and a fellow writer, Barbara Smith, founded Kitchen Table, Women of Color Press, which was dedicated to furthering the writings of black feminists.
Great.
If I pause weirdly, it's because I'm trying to read my own writing, and it's not even handwriting, it was typing, so... she also became increasingly concerned with the plight of black women in South Africa under apartheid, creating Sisterhood in Support of Sisters in South Africa. Audra expressed her concerns not only to the United States, but the world, encouraging a celebration of differences that society instead used as tools of isolation. She embraced differences within individuals and within communities, believing that we are interdependent and better for our complexities. She said, "There's always someone asking you to underline a piece of yourself." This was in an interview with the Denver Quarterly. She said, "Whether it's black, woman, mother, teacher, etc., that's the piece that they need to key into. They want to dismiss everything else. Herein lies the tenet." So that was the quote, and then this is from the like source that I had it. They say, "Herein lies a tenet central to Lord's feminism and overarching ideology as an activist. Each of us is responsible for recognizing identity as the total of many, perhaps infinite, connecting and certainly paradoxical parts. Only by learning to live in harmony with our contradictions can you keep it all afloat. As Alison Kimmich noted in Feminist Writers, throughout all of Audre Lorde's writing, both nonfiction and fiction, a single theme surfaces repeatedly. The Black lesbian feminist poet activist reminds her readers that they ignore differences among people at their peril. Instead, Lorde suggests differences in race or class must serve as a reason for celebration and growth. Lorde's honors and awards include a fellowship from the National Endowment for the Arts. She was a professor of English at John Jay College and Hunter College. Lorde was a poet laureate of New York State. From 1991 to 92, and Warrior Poet, published in 2006 by Alexis de Vaux, is the first full-length biography of Audre Lorde. Some of her other selected works, I had already mentioned The Black Unicorn, but I just really liked that title.
Well, there's another book that came out a few years ago called The Last Black Unicorn.
Oh, yeah?
Yes,
I wonder if it references her at all. Or
somebody
who's
very famous and important.
Look it up.
Yeah.
she had many things, but these are just some selected ones. I Am Your Sister, Black Women Organizing Across Sexualities, and another one called Lesbian Party, an Anthology, which I just liked the name of.
Tiffany Haddish. I knew it was Tiffany Haddish.
Oh,
and I
okay.
didn't think that I was right. But yeah, okay. She just wrote a book called The Last Black Unicorn.
Yeah, so I wonder if she knew about Audra's book, or if she just had also thought of that title.
Maybe.
So I am going to read her poem today called A Litany for Survival. And I'm not sure if it was published in any of her previous books, but on Poetry Foundation, they cite it as being from the collected poems of Audre Lorde, which was published in 1997. So it's called A Litany for Survival. For those of us who live at the shoreline, standing upon the constant edges of decision, crucial and alone, for those of us who cannot indulge the passing dreams of choice, who love in doorways coming and going, in the hours between dawns, looking inward and outward, at once before and after, seeking a now that can breed futures, like bread in our children's mouths, so their dreams will not reflect the death of ours. For those of us who were imprinted with fear like a faint line in the center of our foreheads, learning to be afraid with our mother's milk, for by this weapon, this illusion of some safety to be found, the heavy-footed hoped to silence us. For all of us, this instant and this triumph, we were never meant to survive. And when the sun rises, we are afraid it might not remain. When the sun sets, we are afraid it might not rise in the morning. When our stomachs are full, we are afraid of indigestion. When our stomachs are empty, we are afraid we may never eat again. When we are loved, we are afraid we will vanish. Love will vanish. When we are alone, we are afraid love will never return. And when we speak, we are afraid our words will not be heard nor welcomed. But when we are silent, we are still afraid. So it is better to speak, remembering we were never meant to survive. Mm. Yes. And so
I've heard this poem before.
Yeah?
Yes, I've read it before.
Hmm.
Sometime in my life, the first three lines, I was like, oh, I've read that before.
For those of us that live at the shoreline, standing upon the constant edges of decision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The coming and going and,
mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
What a strong picture to paint.
Right. Well, and I thought it was she has so many great poems, and they all speak so strongly about all the different causes that she, championed and everything, but this, I just feel like it speaks to everyone and everything who is constantly fighting for something and fighting to survive.
Yeah.
And just sort of, and it speaks to, there was a quote that I found on one of the websites that was, I forget what it was exactly, but just talking about silence is your worst enemy.
You're still afraid when
you're
silent.
Yeah, and that's not the quote. But yeah, so it's like you're still afraid when you're silent, so you may as well speak, because you're going to be afraid either way. You may as well speak up for what you believe in and for whatever injustices you see and to make change, because silence isn't going to change anything and the fear is still going to be there.
Right,
so
exactly.
You may as well, give power to your not to your fear, but let that sort of give you power. Your fear,
right, let your fear give you power.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And give you strength to speak out against the things that you want to and feel passionately about.
Right.
So, yeah, I didn't have too many specific notes on that, but it was just, I felt like a really powerful, strong, strong poem.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's very empowering, for sure. Mm-hmm.
And I like how she splits up her stanzas really nicely, but the last, I like it's going, I feel like it picks up speed and everything, and then at the very end, it, so she has these, like, three bigger stanzas, and then the very last part where she says, so it is better to speak remembering we were never meant to survive, is, like, its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, it feels like it's all this thing that's sort of churning and picking up speed and picking up, like, strength and power and all this stuff, and then it, like, comes to, like, the final, a halt.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, this is the final message. And
in case you forgot, I cannot stress this enough.
Right.
We were not meant to survive.
Yeah, she just frames it very...
That's beautiful.
Beautifully. So that was Audre Lorde.
Wow, thank you.